Hi, Richard.
Hi, Paul.
Excellent. Okay, disclaimers first. I'm Paul Scott, and I'm talking to Richard Crowe again. Nothing we say should be taken as financial advice. It's not as intended as such. It's just us chewing the cud and giving our personal opinions only. Okay, let's launch in then, Richard. A very exciting week. We're recording this just after a massive fall in the main indices. Just to touch on the numbers, the FTSE, I think, closed just under 6,200 on Friday, didn't it?
Yeah.
Or thereabouts. And the futures are indicating it's going to drop another 73 points on Monday.
Yeah.
We're recording this on Sunday. And the Dow had a 500-point drop on Friday as well. That's down to 16,468. Sorry, that's the futures again. So how do you see things, Richard?
I think it's just a healthy correction, really, Dan. I'm quite surprised everyone sort of, there's so many people talking about panic and fear and such like. There obviously is that in the market, because I watch the VIX a lot.
And the VIX that's the volatility measure, isn't it?
That's it, yeah. And that hit 28 on Friday.
Yes.
It's pretty high for the VIX. I think the only time it sort of approached those levels, it did it once before, I think last October, when the market came off. And it was sort of those levels approaching the Lehman's crisis, before the Lehman's crisis, but during the banking crisis. So 28 is a high level for the fix, so there's a lot of fear in the market at that point.
Yes.
And the RSI on the FTSE 250 and the S&P and the Dow Transport is all getting very low. It's also a good indicator that markets are near a short-term bottom, so...
I mean, I think it certainly looks as if we're going to get a nice bounce fairly soon, doesn't it? But the question, because, the FTSE now, I think, is down five consecutive days, and five or six is normally the maximum, isn't it? And then you get quite a big rebound.
Yeah.
Particularly if sort of leveraged longs are being flushed out of the market. I mean, that must be part of the selling, but the selling in the US was just unrelenting, wasn't it? That's the thing I thought was interesting. Thursday and Friday, there were really no significant bounces. Which I don't know. Have you compared that with other falls? I have really.
In all honesty, I didn't sort of the falls on the US on Friday and Thursday didn't sort of. I sort of felt immune to it all, to be honest. I wasn't even paying a lot of attention. I never really pay a lot of attention to the FTSE 100, to be honest, because it's just a nonsense index, isn't it? It's just
so heavily weighted with resources and banks.
You've got farmers, and you've got sort of a lot of international companies that are more foreign companies than, you've got your HSBCs are being over in the Far East more than over it. So it's one of those indexes that's never ever going to go anywhere, I don't think. You're never ever going to see that take off, and you're never ever going to see it really come back a lot, because the way things get reshuffled in there as well, when they drop out, good stocks drop out and bad stocks just about done all they can to get in the FTSE 100 get in, and it sort of it constantly sort of refreshes the parts other beers can't reach. They refresh it with some flat stale ale of some sort, so it's not an index. I pay more attention to the FTSE 250 really, which is far more indicative of what's going on in this country and stocks in general, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I did a piece in my Stockopedia blog last week, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, where I showed the various indices, and actually, small caps, the SMXX, which is the small caps index I look at, is very close to the all-time highs.
Yeah.
It's hardly dropped at all. Although on Friday I did see a lot of stocks starting to drop, 2%, 3%, 4%, 5%, often on very, very small volume on the small cap side.
Yeah, well, small caps give better. Looking at the small cap index, it gave back 1.3% on Friday.
Did it?
The 50-250 gave back 2%, and the 50-100 gave back 2.8%. So even AIM beat the. It was only down 1.5%. Now, if I thought people were just dumping the market, willy-nilly, then I would have thought AIM and the small cap index would have taken a bigger clout in than the bigger index.
Yes, Yes, I agree. I mean, in the big pullback last October, it was across the board, wasn't it? Whereas now, for the moment anyway, it's concentrated in large caps. I mean, in the US as well, the Russell 2000 has dropped far, far less than the big indices, hasn't it?
So
it does seem to be the big companies with international exposure that are being whacked. And as you say, domestic companies to the UK or American domestic market are not really being affected. But won't there be sort of follow-on selling? If the big indices continue dropping, then I think you could well see a wave of panic move into small caps as well. Do you think there's
That's what tends to happen, but it looks like a tale of two markets to me, because I hear all this about China and China slowing down, but for every bit of loss from China slowing down to the, you know, what did the UK sell to China? I was watching a year ago.
Not very much.
No, I was watching a year ago, they were saying, oh, we don't sell enough to China, Germany sells everything to China.
Yeah,
and, you know, sort of, we don't sell anything, we've got to change our ways. But then looking at it on Friday, the German manufacturing index came out and it beat expectations.
Did it?
So I would have thought that if there was, you know, if China was a real problem for industrial companies in Europe, the German index would have been one that would have, you know, I was sat there thinking this is going to miss today because of China, and it beat. And Germany's manufacturing was growing faster than expected. So all I can put it down to is America is screaming away and much faster than most people sort of realise. And the UK is helping. And a few bits in Europe are doing quite well as well. Consumers in Europe are starting to spend. So for every bit of loss there is for China, we get the benefits of lower oil, lower minerals, and
lower inflation. Well, that's true, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. And also, I mean, the other thing is with the strong dollar, the strong dollar, the US is going to be sucking in more imports.
Yeah.
So, you know, German companies might end up selling fewer cars to China, but more to America. I mean, somebody flagged up to me actually the other day how much the German car makers have shares have dropped. And I mean, I'm looking at BMW, for example, and I mean, they peaked in April at over 120 euros a share. And then they've lost a third. They're 80 euros a share now, and that's yielding dividend yield of 4.3% forecast and a PE of 8.3. Now, that's starting to look bloody interesting, I would say.
Yeah. You know, BMW is pretty a pretty solid buy in anyone's book, isn't it, really? It's, you can't fight the Germans. We've had a couple of times and we've won, but when it comes to finances, leave them alone. And when they build, it's just fantastic. So they're going to win hands down when it comes to building things. So
yes, I agree. And I mean, the euro, the currency, has obviously Germany's been the main beneficiary because it gives them a nice cheap currency to export with, doesn't it?
Yeah, they've got it hunky dory because as long as they've got weakness in Greece and all these other things, it gives them a weak euro and they're benefiting, which is why they should be really helping to bail out Greece a bit more, because they're the beneficiaries of the weak euro, you know. So.
Exactly. Couldn't agree more. Okay, so you're firmly in the healthy correction camp then. I mean, I'm not sure, personally. I think, to me, it just somehow feels more serious this time than a usual correction. So I've kind of prepared myself for this being maybe the start of a bear market as well. I don't know what odds I would give to it being a correction and rebound, or probably 50-50 between that and a more serious downturn. So personally, I'd cut right back on my geared portfolio. I mean, I don't adjust my long-term portfolio for market ups and downs, but my trading, I've cut the gearing right back. So, I mean, have you taken any action on your own portfolios?
Not a lot, to be honest. I'm pretty well quite invested. I'm about 90% invested in my pension and 70% in my ISA, and I'm only 70% there because I sold a couple of stocks recently that looked like they'd topped, and they were quite big holdings.
Which ones were those?
That was Howdens. I took profits in that because their directors there have been selling quite a few shares. The results came out, and although they were good, I didn't think that they... you can't have a PE of 20 and be growing at a pace of 10.
No.
And, you know, sort of, if your growth rate's 10 and your PE is 20, then your PE's got to stretch, and it's difficult to get the PE to keep stretching from 20.
Yes,
unless you can grow at a faster rate than your PE. So I took profits in that, and I'll probably revisit that if there's a bit more of a pullback in that. And
Yeah, I was going to say the Stockopedia report is showing a forward PE of 17.1 now, so that has dipped quite a bit, hasn't it?
Yes.
So there might be a chance. What sort of level, I don't suppose you want to say, but what sort of level might you would you consider a purchase on that?
I've got a feeling it's probably going to see another 10% off of that, maybe. One of the things they had is they've got a big central warehouse that they were trying to get constructed up in Northampton Way. And they'd almost got the planning through, and then all the people living there sort of kicked up a stink, and they lost the planning for it. So I wonder whether that's going to be a problem for them to expand as fast if they don't have this huge central warehouse that they were planning on. So, and then the director's selling as well, so it says to me that maybe they think they're going to have a little year or two where they're not going to be able to grow quite as fast.
Yeah,
because of this warehouse issue. But that's me guessing, you know. You can only sort of like try and guess the directors' minds if they're selling shares as well. So.
I see. So one of them sold £6.1 million of.
Yeah, a bunch of them have been selling for a couple of months now, you know, sort of.
Oh yeah, God, there's a £4.4 million sale in June. Quite a bit. They've banked. £12 million, roughly.
Yeah.
In the last few months.
Yeah.
So that is a fairly good signal to take some money off the table yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So there's, you know, lots of other interesting places, you know, for that money. It's done well, and I've got some cash waiting there to sort of buy on the dip here if we can.
Well, that was my next question, actually. Question three was, will buy the dip work again? Because that's been, particularly in the US market, buying the dip is now so ingrained in investor psychology, isn't it, that it's sort of a self-reinforcing thing. But at some point, when it stops working, I think it could be carnage.
Quite a bit works as long as you know when the dip's sort of like bottom, really, don't you?
Quite
a dip always works. You just know what is the bottom of the dip. That's the.
From what you said previously, we must be getting quite close to that point, though. So are you sort of poised by the buy button? And
I bought a couple of bits on Friday. The Cineworld is one that I've been buying quite a lot of. And
the cinema chain. Was it C-I-N-E?
C-I-N-E, yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been buying quite a few of those. I was in them a little while back, and then they had a bit of an issue with some... The shares came off for some sort of like share deal that went through, and it was like a financing thing, and I just didn't know why the shares were going off, and because I didn't understand it very well, I thought I'd just join the crowd and sell. I should have bought back in on the dip, and I didn't, because I'd made good profit in there, and I wasn't expecting them to do quite as well as they would, but then they came out with results recently that were cracking and well ahead of expectations, and it looks like the second half of the year will be really good. So having bought a load of those on the results, and then I just took a little bit of profit on the Wednesday, and then bought them back on the Friday for like just a little 20 pence.
Okay, yeah, but I was going to say, looking at the chart, that's almost as an all-time high, isn't it?
So
it hasn't really dipped at all. So it seems a funny one to... So you're not really buying the dip there, are you? Buying the outperformance.
Yeah, and I bought some... D.S. Smith that I'd sold a few days ago as well. I bought those back on Friday.
Which one, D.S. Smith?
D.S. Smith, SMDS.
SMDS.
Yeah, I wouldn't call them particularly cheap, but they just sounded like in their results that they sounded a bit cocksure. And when I've seen that from the company before in previous times, they've suddenly come out with cracking trading statements. So,
I mean, the PE there's full cost 14.4, which looks quite reasonable. 3.2% dividend yield. Fair bit of debt, but again, that one hasn't. Oh, it's dipped a little, but not much, has it, in the last few days?
No, most of the stuff I've got is all consumer cyclicals, really, and I'm not involved in any real sort of stuff that sells abroad or engineering companies or manufacturing companies. So all the retailers, you know, stuff like that, they're all doing. They're all pretty much at their recent highs, really. You know, they're not on the market a lot.
I mean, Mothercare and Debenhams have come back a fair bit, aren't they? Debenhams is one I quite like, but I'm looking at maybe buying if it dips much further. But you like Mothercare recently, which has come off quite a bit, hasn't it? That's down to £2.56 now. Are you still holding that one?
Yeah, I like that. I like Mothercare still. It's the CEO bought some shares just after the results, so they've committed to buying quite a few shares still. That's probably what you saw as an opportune moment to get some after that. Maybe you thought the shares were going to carry on going higher, but they're, you know, they've had a good run. From £1.68, they went up nearly £3, and I was buying it from like 168 last October, and
yeah,
that's the £3, and you've got to think to yourself, there's got to be a bit of profit taking at some point. And
yeah,
you know, a lot of traders in there as well, they sort of see Mothercare getting spoken about, charts doing well, and after the results, they probably just banked a bit of profit in that. But I'll give it another few weeks, and it's probably going to be back on its way up, I would think. But
I mean, it's on a forward PE of 23. We always have this conversation, don't we, about Mothercare? I can never see that the price is right, personally. But I mean, I know you're talking about it outperforming, but I mean, the broker forecasts have actually come down quite significantly in the last year, from about 12p earnings per share to about 9 by the looks of it, or 9.5 or something. So why are the brokers' forecasts going down if you think it's going to outperform?
I'm not sure those broker forecasts are all the same. Broker, you've got has that got Cantor Fitzgerald's forecast in there?
It might be, because they've been bearish on it for a long time, haven't they?
I don't like Cantor Fitzgerald as a broker much. I don't think their research is, bustingly great in really...
But they're prepared to take a contrarian stance, aren't they?
Which
I like that, because 98-99% of other broker research is either hold or buy, which, you know, isn't much use, is it, really?
No, they did have that on, you know, they had a contrarian view on, or they probably still have, they did have on Carpet Riot, you know, and that they weren't interested in Carpet Riot at all, and even when the shares have gone from, like, £3.50 to what, £5, nearly £6, they got to recently. They've only just recently gone from sell to hold after the shares have doubled.
Ah,
oh,
right.
So, you know, you just
means they've admitted they've got it wrong, really.
Yeah, sure, like capitulating there a bit after the event.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know, like you say, these forward PEs, you've got to sort of like guess that the brokers are wrong. And you're right, and sort of like with Carpet Right, I think we was having a discussion back in October, the forecasts were like for 8p have been raised to 12p, and now they're you're talking about 24 pence next year on the broker forecast.
Wow.
And I think they'll probably beat that as well, so...
Okay, so it's actually starting to make sense about it.
Yeah, when you look back at, when they were £3.40, and, you know, if you knew they were going to be doing 24 pence plus... going forward here, and I
very
think it'd probably
point.
Be more like
be bar.
You know, much more than that. You'd have been a screaming buy, but you don't see that until after the new guy's proved himself, really, and you've got to just take that.
That's a very good point. So, we shouldn't take broker forecasts as gospel, should we? And broker consensus, we should look at as just someone else's guesswork, and they could be wildly wrong.
The fact is, they will be wrong. You know, like I think Mervyn always used to say. You know, when he used to say what interest rates are going to do, he said, you know, we make a forecast, but we know that forecast will be wrong. But you can only make a forecast, your best guess at it, and when you get there, hopefully you're close to right.
Yeah.
You know the broker forecasts are never going to be exactly right unless the direct...
Yeah, it's just
before the results, what they are, you know.
Yeah, so it's just a question of how wrong they're going to be rather than whether they're going to be wrong.
And
with companies with a lot of operational gearing, like retailers, for example, you know, the figures can be, the profit number can be wildly different, can't it, few extra percentage points on sales.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Seeing as we're talking about stocks, any other individual stocks that you think are looking interesting as potential buys?
Well, Boohoo's getting a little bit interesting just here. I know you're quite keen on those as well.
Which one, Richard? I didn't catch the name.
Boohoo.
Oh, Boohoo. Yeah, I love them.
Yeah. I've had a small holding. I've only held them just because the chart's trending that way, and there's been a big selling in there, and you're just waiting for them to clear off, I think. But I noticed lately the volume's picking up a bit, and the price, you know, that's one that actually went up on Friday.
I know, it was very, but I was getting really nervous about that. I thought in this type of market, short term, you know, that could easily come off to 25, 24p, just on general market sentiment. So in my trading, my short term trading account, I reduced my gearing a bit on that one, but purely because I had to, because I was sort of geared 4 times on it or something ridiculous like that. But I've kept my core holding, my long term holding. But amazingly, it didn't drop at all, did it?
No, it's the volume's picking up, and they've got their trading update in about September the 12th, isn't it? So,
well, I rang the PR people, and they said they're not going to do a trading update this year. I mean, that could change, obviously, but she said that because the the interim period ends 31st of August and the results are out on the 29th of September. So because it's such a relatively short gap, that they're not going to do a trading update.
Oh, that
apparently.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So end of September will be. But they've launched this app, haven't they? An iPhone app now, which was an astonishing gap in their armoury for an online retailer not having an app.
Yeah.
Absolutely bizarre.
Yeah.
So, but notwithstanding that, the fact they've got one now, it's good, it works. I've ordered some stuff off it. That surely is going to boost sales a fair bit, I would imagine, wouldn't you?
Well, you would hope so, yeah. It seems to be working well for the likes of Mothercare. They seem to be getting their stuff online and via mobile is doing really well. So you've got to be there today with, you know, apps and stuff like that. It's got to be, you've got to be user-friendly with people that are using, you know, the technology.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it must be.
Especially the youth. I mean, Boohoo targets 16 to 24-year-olds, mainly females, who, I mean, you know, you bump into them in the street, don't you? Because they're just walking directly forwards, you know, looking at their phone pretty much permanently.
Yeah, so, I'm still getting the grips from my gramophone at the moment, so still going through the manual there, it works.
Yeah. I could have said wireless meant something different to
our
generation, didn't
set.
It? Okay, let's touch on a few more macro things then. So basically, you would say, I mean, you're going to be buying the dips then on things, aren't you, really, without spending your eyes?
As it stands now, unless I'm proved wrong and the market sort of, you know, takes a real big, deep dive down, then I'll be holding out for a while, but
yeah.
I can't, you know, sort of there's you know, opportunities there, I think, that are, you know, something. Because what happens is you've got the September trading statements. September's usually quite strong for a lot of trades. Now, I've sat here for August and watched the statements come out in the morning and thought, what have I woken up for? There's not been any news at all this morning. And I've sat there and thought, I could have had an extra hour in bed and just got up at 8 and, you know, done well.
That's exactly what I do. I lean out of bed at 7, get the iPad, have a quick look through the announcements for the morning. And, you know, the skim read of them. And like you say, last week, I give myself a lion for an hour and a half most days.
Yeah, so it changes in September. You get like a lot of, because it's like March and April is quite good. And then you sort of 6 months on in September, October, and you're sort of at the other end of it. And where you get a lot of result statements come out and trading statements.
I mean, there's a lot of 30th of June interim reports still to come, aren't there? I think, looking at the calendar, I think next week's going to be quite busy. This coming week's going to be quite busy on
coming up this week,
results.
Yeah, well, this is when it starts, end of August, and then you get through to September and all that,
Yeah, so if I'm correct in thinking it, you're going to be kind of holding back, waiting for stock-specific news and reacting to that, and or presumably you're going to be waiting for some sign that the main indices have turned as well, are you? Would that be a fair
I'm watching sort of like what the consumer stocks are doing still, because I think that, you know, that's the air at the being, and ignore the miners and the oilers and the industrials until, you know, you see an actual pick-up in the whole sector. I don't want to really buy miners until I see all the miners sort of like picking up and copper taking off a bit more and stuff like that. So I'm big on miners and you know, resource companies anyway. It's not something I normally deal in, but when they're smashed to pieces, you'd be a fool to ignore them at the bottom when the market has bottom. So but for the moment, oils, miners and the industrials, I'm pretty much ignore. I picked up a few GKN on Friday just based on the chart, just for a trade, but they, you know, sort of, they look like they might be a little bounce there, just to skim a little bit off of, but.
Yeah, I mean, I did a short-term trade last week on Lonmin. I bought some, and this was just really into punting territory, to amuse myself when I'm bored. I bought some at 29p, and within a few hours, it had dropped to 26p. So, I mean, I was thinking to myself, oh, my God, you know. So I thought, I'll average down or kill it. So I averaged down at 26. And it bounced within 2 days to 35. So
it was
total fluke. So I gratefully grabbed the money and ran at 35.
Yeah.
So I think there are sort of bottom fishing bounce opportunities in resource stocks, aren't there?
Well, I still like buying some of these. That are at the top, like Top Tiles is near an recent high, and the director, the CEO there, bought £1 million worth.
Oh, really?
Well, bought a million shares, 1.3 million quid's worth a couple of months back, and they've got a trading update in September, so they still look
TPT, that one.
TPT, yeah. You know, they're not giving anything back, really. And Pendragon is another one I'm buying where they're, you know. So
sorry, which one, Richard?
Pendragon, the car dealer.
Oh, Pendragon, PDG, yeah. That one, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're all much of a muchness, though, the car dealers, aren't they? They're all on P's of about 10 or 11, you know.
Actually, I think theirs is probably more like, their P is probably more like 9 on Pendragon. They've already come out and said their results would be significantly ahead of market expectations.
Okay.
It's a bit of direct to buy in there. They upped the dividend massively compared to last year, so you look like you're probably getting towards a 4%, you know, you've got around a 4% yield there as well.
Oh, okay,
so,
fair enough.
And the growth rate's pretty stonking. They halved their net debt from 100 million to 50 million, so
a bit of good
news, you know, in amongst those results, and they sound quite cocksure. So I remember back in 2000, you know, early 2000s, when they turned round back then and the car dealers took off, they took off like no, they seemed to be so highly geared that they took off like nobody's business, you know.
Mind you, the sector has changed, though. I mean, I've done some digging about how the dynamics of it work now, and apparently the manufacturers have squeezed out practically all the margin from new car sales. You know, they get a tiny amount, the dealers do, and they just make their money on servicing, basically.
It's second-hand cars as well, you know, they sort of said that it's going to be, because they've had a lot of these new car sales have been doing really well, the second-hand car market will be good over the next few years, so
fair point.
What they were saying, so that's where they've got a bit of margin. Also, their leases, they had in the first half a timing issue, so the first half didn't do as well from leases, but that would fall into the second half, so they're going to get a boost in the second half from the leasing side.
Oh, I see. What from reduced rent, do you mean?
No, from car leasing.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
So
yeah, yeah.
The timing of that didn't fall for them as normal, so they're going to get a boost in the second half. So
Somewhere
in the first half, despite that, really. And
I mean, looking at the broker consensus, they've been... It's just been upgraded kind of every other month for the last year, hasn't it, Pendragon? Looking a year ago, broker consensus was 2.89p. It's just been upgraded continuously, and it's now 3.5p. So that usually suggests there's more to come, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What do you reckon, maybe 4p earnings per share, something like that for this year?
Yeah, I reckon going forward, they could probably do better than that, I'm hoping. You know,
okay.
I reckon that, you know, they may be on a P/E of about 9 for next year.
Okay.
Which, you know, sort of.
So that would imply about 5p earnings per share, then, wouldn't it?
Getting on for, you know, that's what I'm, you know, brokers are obviously not saying that, but the way they're moving and the way things are going there, you know, I've just got. And also, I think that they might benefit from higher interest rates, bizarrely enough, because when these.
How would that benefit them?
Well, I think rather like banks are supposed to benefit from higher interest rates because they'll have higher margins then. This is what I'm being told in all the. If the Bank of England puts its interest rates up, I don't know, if they put them up a quarter, I suppose the likes of Lloyds are going to charge people like you and I an extra 0.5% along the line somewhere.
Yeah, I see.
A lot of these things are done on financing deals, aren't they? So, you know, these car dealers are offering 0% finance for lots of cars. You know, when I bought my car 6 months ago, take up a 0% finance deal.
Well, exactly. I mean, Giles Hargreaves said this at Mellow Derby. I interviewed him and a couple of Lord Lee and David as well. I chaired a session there, and Giles talked about cars, and he just said, you know, he wanted to buy a new Jag or whatever it was he bought. I think he said it was a Jag, and he looked at that. He didn't need or want financing, but when he looked at the, like you say, the 0% finance deal, it was a no-brainer. So he bought it on finance. Because even if he can deploy his money elsewhere and say 4 or 5%, he's making a 4 or 5% interest margin.
Exactly. So, you know, I didn't want the finance deal. I went there and sort of said, you know, I'll buy it. And then sort of she said to me, the woman there, that, you know, we're doing 0% finance. So I said, oh, okay, I can make more than that on the market. So So you're financing my next Pendragon deal.
You're creating a sort of circular transaction there, aren't
you? Yeah. Self-funded motor vehicle.
On
that basis, I think if interest rates rise, then these car dealers are not doing 0% finance anymore. They're sort of, there's probably a percentage here for them that's a bigger percentage passed on to the dealer, I think. So that might be what goes on there. I don't know, but so that's sampling.
Yeah, so the takeaway from that might be that actually people, the market is pricing car dealers cheaply because it fears higher interest rates will reduce demand, but you're saying kind of that may not be the case at all, presumably.
Yeah, you know, I'm not dead certain, but I've got a feeling that that might be part of the reason why they're sounding so confident, you know. So
I like a lot of the smaller car dealers as well, things like Cambrian. I don't own any of them.
Yeah.
Oh, I do now. I've got some Caffins as well.
Yeah.
But the smaller ones, they're stuff for the freeholds. That's why I like them.
Yeah.
You know, they these smaller dealers have got fantastic balance sheets in most cases. They own outright nearly all the sites they operate from. That's
yeah.
Cambrian, Virtue, I think, is Google Virtue. Caffins as well. There are one or two others, aren't there? So I think there's going to be consolidation at some point.
Yeah,
I think somebody
will
come. Yeah, somebody will come along with £1 billion in debt or something, hoover these things up, gear them all up. You know, so there could be nice payouts on some of those,
yeah,
couldn't there, from takeover deals?
Oh, yeah. It looks interesting because it's a sector that's been sort of shunned for the last, you know, sort of 5, 6, 7 years. People just haven't been interested in car dealers, have they? So,
no, that's right. That's right. Mind you, they've all re-rated a fair bit now, haven't they? So,
yeah. I think
Caffins hasn't. That one's been an absolute dog in my portfolio. But it's one
car
of the
colours. I think Car Colours is a good idea about car dealers and how they're doing. I'm sure people, it's a bit like this grunge thing, that people only buy dark coloured clothes when they're sort of depressed. And when happy, they buy brightly coloured cars. And I'm sure you see more brightly coloured cars at the moment than you did a couple of years ago. It was all greys, blacks and silvers at one. But now I'm seeing oranges and sort of yellows and things crop up. And but I think there's a psychology thing somewhere in there.
That's an interesting thing. It might be worth Googling for some.
You'll be looking at all the colours.
I'm sure somebody's done a PhD on it somewhere.
Yeah. You'll be looking at all the colours when you drive down the road now. You won't be paying attention to your drive and you'll be counting the red cars and yellow cars.
Well, actually, funnily enough, talking about not paying attention when you're driving, I read something on Twitter. Apparently, motor claims are going up at the moment because the insurers couldn't work out why, but they think it's because people are irresponsibly using mobile phones, you know, monitoring things or texting or whatever.
Yeah.
That's quite an interesting. Is there an investment angle on that, do you think? Should we be shorting insurance companies?
I don't know. I bought a witness camera for my vehicle, though, so that I'll get rid of that sort of. I've got it recorded front and back there, and if there's any nice young women in the car behind me as well, I'll have a picture of them as well.
Yeah, actually, there was an incident in Hackney recently where the Aston Martin driver left his dashboard cam, on, and it filmed a guy pushing a pram who came up alongside it and keyed it. Did 9 grand for the damage, and he was caught because of these cameras rolling. So, yeah, amazing.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, car dealers, all the consumer cyclicals are sort of, I don't think they're giving much back, and I think that's the way the market is at the moment. It's a people are looking at indexes where indexes are actually, you know, plummeting, but most of that is the oilers and the miners and the industrials.
I agree with you, but does it spread over into a broader market panic? That's my worry. That's why, personally, I don't want to be geared at the moment and start. But although I have bought a few things on the dips. I bought some Fly, I really held them, but I bought some more Flybe last week. I think 82p or something. I think it was... Quite a good. Are you revisiting that one? I know you.
I've
on it, haven't you?
Yeah, I bought a small few a little while back.
I've
only got a few. I like dark group better really because they sort
of. That's so pricey now, isn't it? That one relatively.
When they come out and they sound upbeat, they usually it's rare you see them come out upbeat at the end of the year and saying next year's gonna, you know, they're looking good. They're usually pretty guarded with what they say.
Mm.
And also, all this oil price going down. And people...
It's great for airlines.
Yeah.
Once their hedging expires.
Yeah, people also going abroad on their holidays. So I think sort of Flybe's quite domestic. So I think people have been a bit browned off with the weather over it this year, whereas somewhere like Dark Group...
They do a fair bit of hops over to Europe as well. I was looking at grabbing a few days in France and... To the smaller regional airports, Flybe to fly to quite a few of them, actually.
Yeah, but being that they do so much domestic, I thought Dark Group just had more exposure to kind of people off abroad. They've got good good exposure to the oil price going down in the future, and it just looks, also they've got that Fowler Welsh, the cool lorries.
Oh, the haulage business. Yeah.
Sort of, I think probably that's doing quite well in this climate for retailers as well. You know,
yeah, fair comment. I mean, that's very low margin stuff, though, isn't
it? Yeah, it's not that much, but it's just doing better rather than what it's done in the past. So that's just a little bit of improvement on the icing on the cake.
Actually, look. Yeah, I mean, I haven't looked at Dark Group for a few months, but actually it's had two quite chunky earnings upgrades, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So earnings forecasts have gone up from 25p to about 33p.
Yeah.
And the shares have come off the top of it. So actually the PE is down to forecast PE of 13.3.
Yeah.
It's not bad, actually, is it?
I think
EasyJet is cheaper than that, I think, isn't it? What are your latest? I know you've liked EasyJet before. What are your thoughts now?
EasyJet is going to be, I'm actually trading them at the moment. I buy them on the dips because the chart sort of looks like it's turning up. And I think it is still turning up. It's got a bit of a
doing one of your famous bowls, isn't it?
It looks a bit iffy. The bowl looks a little bit iffy over the last, it did that first part of it. But as long as that stays above that sort of £15.75 level around there and starts carrying up again, I think the trend is still up. It's just been met by the general market sort of yuckiness that we've had, and there's going to be out of capacity for them for quite a bit. These are just the cheap airline hopping, Ryanair and EasyJet and Flybe. There's a bit of overcapacity in the market from what I've read for the coming year.
Yeah. There's a lot of capacity coming in, I believe, isn't there?
Yeah. So it's more a problem than, you know, probably someone like Chewy or Dark Group, where they're doing the actual flights for holidays, you know, Jet 2 and all that is probably.
Well, EasyJet, go on.
No, it's finished there, go on.
EasyJet, I mean, that was down 78p, 4.6% on Friday,
yeah.
16.24. I mean, that looks good value now. Forward PE of 11.6. There's a nice dividend yield.
Yeah, yeah.
3.7. That looks to me more attractive than Dark Group on valuation, I have to say.
It does on valuation. Just the only thing is, I think with Dark Group is, I think the brokers underestimate them quite a lot. And when they get into one of these trades where they're going to benefit from lower fuel going forward, and if the UK consumer's flying off to the sunshine a bit more, I think they'll probably be undervalued. And you might get a sort of a beat and you get bigger upgrades, and suddenly it's one of those where you think, blimey, they were cheaper than the brokers were suggesting.
Fair comment. Okay. I mean, I personally can't really think of that many shares that I've been buying recently. I mean, as I say, Flybe last week. I did buy some SRT, Software Radio Technology, but I think that was a mistake. That's an AIM minnow, so it wouldn't interest you, Richard. I mean, they put out a good contract win announcement, but I think it was probably already in the price.
I do like them, actually. I've seen them before, and they look like they have potential, but because I sort of try to avoid things that I don't really understand very well now, so I think if you really sort of do the Buffett thing and sort of buy stuff that you really sort of understand, and retail...
It's a simple business model, though, on that one. I remember the CEO gave a couple of talks on it that I've been to, and he just said, look, we've got something like, I think, $4 million a year fixed costs, so we have to make double that in sales to make a profit, or something like that, really.
Right.
And then they have just their Achilles heel, they have a bit like Indian Vision, they have these big lumpy contract wins, so they'll have a good year, and then a year when they don't close enough deals, when they warn on profits, and it's just a yo-yo thing between profits and then profit warnings.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately has been the bane of my life.
Do I pay a dividend?
SRT.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
No, all the AIM ones are trying to stick to sort of like divvy payers and.
I agree. I mean, Indigo Visions pays decent divvies. And always have done. And they're £2.20 a share now. It paid a 75p special divvy a few years ago.
Yeah.
So I've got back more than my original cost on that, but. The trouble is, you know, they need to win two or three big contracts a year.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is this year. I think they've only won one so far, or might even be zero. I'm not sure. So that one just, it frustrates the hell out of me. It's just up and down like a yo-yo.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to buy into companies in the future in any size that have to win big contracts to meet their numbers. It's too risky.
Yeah, I think all the few names that don't do, you know, as long as they're UK based and they've had a bit of a history, I don't want newly newly listed ones, but sort of like Victoria Carpets, that's been a cracker. That's absolutely going.
It's been astonishing, that one, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, surely there can't be that much more on it now, can there?
Oh, yeah, I think there's a lot more on it, because they, you know, like, they bought that Abingdon Carpets. It was 200% more sales they get from that. So,
yeah.
You know, their sales go up 200%, and like by the time they get the synergies as well, this last set of results only had half a year of Abingdon sales results in them. So, you know, I think their earnings have got to go up. They've got to go up much more.
That's seven bagged in the last year, that share, hasn't it?
Yeah. And they gave, you know, sort of as you was in before that, you got the 300 pence a share dividend that they paid out. So,
incredible.
That was a little cracker. Yeah. And that business growth fund, they invested in it, and they look like quite a shrewd thing backed by the World Bank of Scotland and Barclays.
Funny
enough, they went into Stiles and Woods as well. That's another AIM one.
That one's been astonishing, that restructuring, hasn't it? Yeah. I remember reading about that in the morning, thinking, well, this looks interesting. Wasn't it Henderson who bought out convertible debt at a discount or something
that's it. Yeah.
It took me two or three hours to work out what the deal was. It was that complicated, and unfortunately by that time, shares had already doubled. So
I haven't totally worked out what the deal is, because there's warrants involved and everything. All I know is
it's very complex.
It just looks like such a great deal, and it sort of gets rid of a lot of those preference shares. But they're not going to be paying out nothing like the amount of interest that they're paying out on those preference shares now, and it leaves them the money to. And the order book's gone up sort of like every half year for the past 3 years now, and it's the order book's screaming away. So they've got results.
That's STY, the ticker, isn't it? Stiles?
Yeah, they've got results in September, late September. So.
Are you still holding that one, Richard?
Sorry?
Are you still holding that one?
Oh, yeah. I bought a big chunk in those. I think I've got...
Okay.
I think I'm holding nearly 1% of the company there now, so...
Wow. Yeah, I looked...
You don't need a lot to hold 1%, though, you know, sort of...
that sounds good, though.
Yeah. You're still big.
Yeah.
You've got a big ear there. With sugar, come on.
I mean, it is an interesting one, that one. I mean, I made the mistake there. I missed the initial move up. And I then said, I've missed the boat, I won't buy any. But actually, I probably should, you know, sometimes you've got to dive in and pay 50% more, haven't you?
Yeah.
Because it's worth 200% more or whatever. You know?
Exactly, I just kept going on every little bit of pullback there was. I was trying to get more shares, and you can only buy them about sort of like 2,500, or if you're lucky, the market makers will let you have 5,000. It moves the price like threepence. So the only time you can get them is as the traders start. You know, these guys who trade in sort of flog a few shares and think they've made enough money and haven't really looked at the valuation. All they've done is piled in and bought some shares and they take a profit quick and think they've done well, making like 30 or 40%. And you think to yourself, hold on, this 200% here if you just hold your nerve and what have you and see how it goes. So,
that's a very good point. Actually, in a similar vein, I've been buying something over several months now. Some days you can only get 1,000 shares in it, which, you know, is about a grand and a half to us. So I've just been nibbling at it now for 2 or 3 months. It's a company called Best of the Best. And this one really is horribly illiquid, so it's not for most people at all.
Are they the guys that stick a car up for
that's like the one.
And you bid on it, you know, whatever you do, I'll buy a rapid ticket or something.
Exactly, right. BOTB is the Best of the Best. That's the ticker as well, BOTB.
Yeah.
What they do, they stick a supercar, like an Aston Martin or a Ferrari or something, in an airport, physically put it there with a salesman, and you buy tickets to what is essentially a raffle, but of course raffles are illegal. Because of in the UK. So the way they've structured it is really clever. It's actually a spot the ball competition.
Right.
So for you buy a ticket, and the tickets are anything from sort of £3 to win a Mini Cooper up to £20 to win a Bentley. And you win, so you pay for your ticket or however many tickets you want, and then you have to guess, you do a spot the ball competition. And then what they do is, this is the clever bit, they don't actually hold a draw. What they do is they get a panel of experts in who, you know, football referees or whatever, who come to a decision of where they think the ball should be, which is a bizarre way of doing it. It's not actually where the ball was, because that opens it up to fraud. So
yeah.
the panel of experts uses their sort of skill and judgment to say where the ball theoretically should have been, and the person who's closest to that wins the car that they opted to buy. Now, that's all well and good. It's a nice little business in the airports, makes sort of $500,000 a year or whatever. But the interesting thing is, the online side of things is really taking off. And if you play the competition online, it's really addictive. I mean, I always like to do my own due diligence when I test out any company with a website. So I tried out the product. And I find now I'm buying 20 or 30 quid's worth of tickets every month.
Right.
Every week. Sorry, they run a weekly competition online. And if you look at the results for the last couple of trading updates are saying that the online growth is really kicking in now.
Right.
So I think this could get a fairly serious re-rating from a kind of almost cottage industry type thing that people can run from their back office to an online growth stock, you know, which could suddenly mean people start valuing it on 50 or 70 times earnings in a bull market. Who knows?
Yeah, I remember the old spot the bull. I remember my dad sort of like doing it when he used to do the pools and stuff like that. And
he used to
buy a little rubber stamp with about 140 little crosses on it, and you stick it on there, and then people
really?
you still wouldn't win because they'd go down to the point where the centre of the ball was just slightly off, and there used to be arguments about who had actually. But again, that was done on judgment of a panel rather than where the actual ball was.
Oh, was it? Oh,
yeah,
I didn't realise that. Oh,
yeah, because
okay.
That was adding up the fraud. Yeah, exactly. So people could say, yeah, I've got the camera, I know exactly where the ball was. And I took the photograph. And
that's right.
Yeah, so it worked on the same sort of principle. So I suppose you could get the point where you get people to have, like, you know, a bunch of 100 bets all in a particular area or something like that.
Yeah,
I'll have a look at that. It might be interesting.
It's quite interesting. There's only 14 million market cap, and it pays divvies, and it paid a special divvy last year as well. So already profitable. I think you're paying 21 times historic earnings for it at the current price, which, you know, for a tiny business is a lot. I accept that.
Yeah.
But they've got the growth coming through, and online growth is the potentially exciting bit. And they've got a lot of followers on Facebook, I believe, the other thing is they're really clever in their marketing, because what they do is, if you're, they've got like a thing like a dartboard, not a dartboard, but it's more like a bullseye thing, you know, for archery. And they put that over the picture of where they think the ball was. And if you're in the kind of immediate vicinity of, if you put your cross in the immediate vicinity of where the ball is deemed to be, you get your a full 100% back. And if you're in the next ring out, you get, you know, maybe a third back and so on. And then in the outer ring, you get 10% of your ticket price back.
Right.
So what I find is every week I do this competition, I get some money back.
Right.
And it's credited to your account. So you get an email saying, you know, unfortunately you didn't win. However, you've won £6.97 in game credits.
Right.
Of course, that keeps you playing.
Yes.
You feel like
you're getting near to where the target was. You feel like you're doing
exactly.
well.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And actually, even though I know nothing about football, I've been bloody close nearly
right.
every time.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, actually, this is worth doing. And the other thing is they give you 20% off if you buy 5 tickets or more, and they give you 40% off if you buy 10 tickets. So you end up, in practice, buying 10 tickets every time. And I'm looking at this thing thinking, shit, you know, I'm spending 20, 25 quid a week on this. There's no other form of gambling that I would even consider doing that on. So it's addictive for players, and I think those are very interesting factors which could see this thing, you know, significantly grow.
I'll take a look.
Yeah, have a look at that one, Richard.
Yeah.
So total opposite of the normal type of thing you look at.
Yeah.
Okay, any other stocks? Sorry, I've been rambling on a bit there. Any other stocks you want to cover?
What else have we got there? Avesco, they've come off, and I think are you in Avesco as well?
I love that one. Yeah, I was asked at a conference in the spring what was my favourite stock, and I hate tipping things, but I thought, you know, look, people have come there because they want a tip, and it was Avesco I gave it at £1.25 a share.
Right,
because of the outperforming trading updates, and it's done fantastically. It's about £2.10 now, isn't it?
Yeah, well, no, so the old directors bought a load of directors off the chairman, didn't they? The chairman
talked
about half a million quid worth, and that, they bought them off of him, so...
it was more than that, Richard. It was £1 million.
Oh, £1 million, so, that's quite good, and sort of, that came along just after I'd gone back into them, a little while after I'd gone back into them, so... that was quite nice, and I do think that, you know, that's another AIM one, just we were talking about AIM, that sort of looked quite interesting to me, so...
I love it. I mean, when I bought it, it had a 7% dividend yield as well. I mean, that's come down because the shares have shot up. But yeah, the chairman is sort of retirement age, so I think it's fine that he's letting a few shares go. But yeah, he sold £1 million at £1.85, but it was the other directors who bought the lot.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, if you don't see that as a bullish signal, you won't see anything as a bullish signal.
Yeah, you can hardly imagine the chairman's going to mug two of his directors off for £1 million, and they're going to be dumb enough to take them off of him, really. So.
Exactly.
I think that's one that I quite like in the AIM sector. And a little one I'm watching is Sweet Group. Do you know them?
Oh, I do. I mean, that I'm not touching as a legal risk. That's got an ongoing fraud case.
Yeah, it's got all that. But I noticed the shares sort of bottomed out. They've got their train update or results coming up in the next sort of like few... they've got their AGM in the next few weeks. I don't know if they're spanked with that, but someone had about 300,000 shares in there the other day. And that cleared... I just didn't know why someone picked up 300, and it sort of set the share price moving a little bit. And at the moment,
26p a share. It's really bounced quite a bit from the lows, hasn't it? Already.
At the moment, it's sort of like rising a little small buy, and it goes up. You get a bunch of sales, and it doesn't move. And that always sort of looks to me like someone's accumulating some stock there.
Yeah, fair comment. And I suppose if it was going to collapse, it would have done by now wouldn't it?
It's a little aim, but it's just probably worth keeping an eye on. I picked up a tiny few, but...
It's a risky one, that, though. It's got a lot of debt, and it's got a serious legal case.
I wouldn't be sort of very long into that at all, really, but it just looks a tad sort of... just something to watch rather than, you know, keep your eyes open when it does come out with something, you're alert to it, you know,
That's a good point. Yeah, I agree. But it's also those 8 a.m. buys that can be the most profitable trades, can't they?
Yeah.
I mean, Accesso is one that I've in the past, I've always eschewed it because the valuation was just way too high. But I know you and I both thought it was overpriced a few years ago, but I love it now because the contract wins, and if you work out the future earnings, it's actually reasonable value now.
It's sort of, but like you say, that's another one that's sort of like on the interesting sort of side, really.
I worked out if you, because they've got this contract with Merlin, they've won all of Merlin's sites, which is about 100 leisure parks, which in itself is an amazing endorsement of their products and services. So they'll win loads of other new business on the basis that Merlin have shown that much confidence in Accesso. But also, if you factor it in, because they're 5-year contracts kicking in 2016-17, if you factor that into earnings, it's on about 20 times 2017 earnings, which is not particularly expensive, given that this is a real, you know, it dominates the niche globally, and it's got spectacular growth coming in.
Yeah.
So I think that one's going to about a tenner a share, probably higher. I mean, I was buying about £6.90, I think, £7 level, maybe lower than that, I can't remember exactly. Yeah, I was buying on the morning of the announcement, basically, because I thought people anchor to the previous price, don't they?
Yeah.
And they don't want to buy at, say, 25% more. But if an announcement's come out that is that game-changing, it doesn't matter that it's up 25% when it should be up 80%, does it?
No, yeah, that's what I do. You know, so I do that with Stars and Woods and a few others. You just got to bite the bullet and say to yourself, as soon as you see a few sellers come in and look like a bit of profit-taking, you know, ignore them and just add back your own faith and go in there and buy. So,
I agree.
It feels painful when you do it at a time, but then afterwards, even then when you've done it, you look back and you think, why didn't I buy even more?
Well, I know. I mean, I did that with Character Group, actually. It was about £3.90, and they put out a spectacular trading update. And I bought, before the market even opened, at £4.40, so I paid a 50p premium, thinking I was being clever. But then I read something in the accounts when I went through all the narrative that undermined the bull case. I can't remember what it was now, but there was some one-off income, I think, buried where they didn't flag it in the bullet points. It was buried in the narrative. So the shares came right back down again to £4. So I was absolutely bloody livid. But I held on, and they've carried on going up to £5 now, so I got my money back and made a profit. I sold out the last of my character group last week for £5 something, £5.30 I think. So that's been a cracker, that one. Have you looked at that one?
I've left them alone, to be honest. I had past history with them, and they've sort of had these warnings, and I'm not that keen on the Bull Bear. Is that Richard King still there?
I think he might have left. He's been liquidating his entire holding, which, okay, fair enough, he's retiring, but to my mind, if there was loads of money more on the table to be had, he would have stayed in to some extent, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
For that reason, I decided to bank my games and move on.
Yeah, past history just kept me away from them, that's all, but
obviously
my cost is fine, but there you go, you can't trace everything.
No, exactly. Was it Jane on my bulletin board, or not my bulletin board, but Jane, who replies to a lot of the posts and stuff, she has a saying, taboo, which stands for, there'll always be other opportunities.
Yeah,
that's good, yeah. And I like that one. So,
yeah.
Good. Any other points you want to cover, Richard, or should we wrap up?
Pretty much, I think, sort of like, just, you know, most of the stocks there, I'm not panicking or doing anything like that, really. I just think it's a healthy pullback, and I think there'll be some opportunities there, and I'm sure we'll talk about them in the coming weeks when there's, sort of the market bounces or doesn't.
So if you had to gamble, what level do you reckon the indices will bounce at then, short term?
I'm thinking bounce on Monday. I think we'll open up down. And then we'll go through to lunchtime, and then the US will open up, and the US will either open up, or it'll open up down a little bit, and then it will rally from this point. So I think that's probably...
So is it worth buying some call options, do you think?
I never get involved in them, so I couldn't advise you there. I really do options, and it's not so... It starts making things too complicated for me. I prefer to just... All the hedging and stuff like that is... I think you just... In the end, reduce your gains as well. When sort of all hedging's a bit like that, really. You know, you do reduce your risk, but you end up sort of also reducing your gains as well. So I prefer.
I think you're right. I mean, if you've timed it to perfection, then options trades can be spectacularly good.
Yeah.
But how often can you actually time it to perfection?
No.
That's not very often, I think, is the honest answer.
It's a bit like finding FTSE, you'd be shorting the FTSE when the market looks like it's going down. Invariably, people do that just as the market's buying. I bet a lot of people probably shorting the FTSE over the weekend thinking, the market was going to go down a load more. And I've seen in the past when it's done, you know, that point is when all the weekend is when all the traders are panicking. Stories in the Times like it's another 1987 crash. And
things
like that. You know, I lived through a 1987 crash. This is a picnic. This is 1987 crash. That was all over in 2 days, 27%. And probably I know about it. But it's, sort of, it doesn't feel like, because past falls have usually taken everything down. This time, I'm watching consumer cyclicals staying firm. And if we was in for a real bad time, people would be getting out of consumer cyclicals. I'm sure they would.
So if you see the contagion happening then, if you start to see... So presumably, do you look at the charts of individual sectors then each day or something like that?
I've on my stock list, I have all the retailers in one block, and I have all the builders in another block, and industrials in another block. And during the day, you can see what sectors are doing well. You can see that the...
Yes.
Straight away in the morning, you see the miners all blue, all black, red, and... I watch those all the time, and sort of watching all the retailers in general, there's not many of them sort of taking much of a beating at the moment compared to that. And I would have thought, you know, people, if it was going to be that bad, you know, sort of then consumers are not going to have so much money to spend.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're the first things to take a wallop, really.
Yeah, so presumably if you start to, because I mean, on Friday in the US, it contagion did spread. It was across the board selling, wasn't it? So I mean, if we see more of that next week, are you going to kind of change your view on that, or will you get more bullish as things drop?
There might be a few little bits that I'm not committed to that I might sell, you know, some of the little things like, where am I? I don't know, sort of like the DS Smith. I'm not over committed to those really as a
term
hold. And I picked up some inland over the weekend, just last week, and, you know, sort of. That might be, I'll only keep it as a trade rather than keep it long term. And
which was that, Inland Homes?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Iron Head in the Hell. Yeah, I like that one as well. It's not one I hold, but I like
it. Sharks just done a nice little breakout on there, so I have some of them. And I'll probably, they've got a trading update soon, so I'll, you know, I'm not committed to those or, you know, probably even Blue I wouldn't be committed to longer term. I don't know until I see the next trading update. But the main stuff, you know, most of the big retailers, I'm still holding on because I think there's special